Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Well, every once in a while, we like to talk a little UFC, MMA, boxing, combat sports. Big John McCarthy, Showtime analyst, been a referee on UFC bouts and other fights. He will be on the Showtime production of Bellator, MMA and Showtime partnering up. They've got some big fights that are coming up. It's MMA 256. That's coming up Friday. It'll air on Showtime. It'll be 6 p.m. our time here on the West Coast. And Big John will be on the broadcast. John McCarthy joining us now. Where are you right now, Big John?
Right now, I am at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut, for the show.
What's the feel? Because you know, I was just at the NCAA tournament in Indianapolis, and it was feeling more like normal, but not quite normal. If you know what I mean, what does it feel like for you to be in an event like that?
I think you said it about right. It's feeling more normal, but not quite normal. It's still, you know, just. You got to go through different protocols and there's, you know, quarantining and things like that just make things a little bit odd and strange. But it hasn't affected the sport as far as the fights and the way things go. It hasn't affected it at all in a bad way. In a lot of ways, it's been positive.
You have had a wonderful career in MMA, officiating fights. You're a black belt yourself in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You've been a referee. You're a color commentator now. Did you think, like, years ago, if I said, hey, Big John, you're going to end up on Showtime, you'll be the analyst on these fights, like, you would have said I was crazy?
I would have said you were more than that. No, I mean, never in my wildest dreams did I think that I would end up following the path that I followed and ending up where I've ended up. I'm someone who is lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time, and it's all worked out for me.
How did it start? Did you start as a competitor and the sport blossomed, or how do you end up as a referee in a UFC bout or even as an analyst calling the action on Showtime?
Well, it started out for me, if you go all the way back to before there was a UFC, it started, I worked as a police officer with the LAPD, and there was a use of force that was done that everybody saw. It was called the Rodney King incident, and they put together this group to try to figure out a better way to do something than what was done there. And they had martial artists from all around the Southern California area. And I met up with a guy named Horian Gracie, and I went and started working out with him and his brothers, and I fell in love with what they did. And along came this thing that they were going to call War of the Worlds, and it changed to the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And I was there with Hoyt as one of his sparring partners for it, getting him ready. And then after the very first match occurred, they had brought in some referees from Brazil, and the very first match ended with the referee stopping it. And at the time, he didn't have the power to do that. And I was asked by Horian and said, hey, I need you to referee. And I was like, I have no idea how to referee. And then I said, it doesn't matter, you're going to do great. So that's how I started.
Wow. So you get in there and, you know, you're kind of, you know, and it's really interesting, like with officiating in all sports, I think when an official's doing a really good job, you never notice they're there, right?
I've always looked at it, and that's the cliche. But the truth is, if you're a good official and the fighters do not do things that make you have to come in and either halt the action or whatever, then, yeah, you don't want to be seen. That's your purpose. That's your goal. But the fighters will determine if you're going to end up being seen, because when they're the ones saying if there's going to be something done that's legal or illegal, and if they do it something that's illegal, you're going to end up, you know, coming in and people are going to notice you. So, but the good officials are the ones that, yes, you don't see them, but it's also because the fighters don't do anything to make them have to come in.
You often see the official talking to the fighters. What's the official doing? What is it? Is it sort of preemptive, like, I don't want to have to interject myself, but watch what you're doing? Or what are they doing in that situation?
All kinds of things, just like what you're saying. You know, you're always communicating with the fighters because in the back, you have gone over exactly what we call bout conduct. You know, people think that you're going over a bunch of all of the rules. You know, in MMA right now, there's a list of, you know, 27 rules or fouls, and you're going to go over all those. You don't go over all those. You ask them what they have questions about. You'll, you know, talk about certain ones. But you really talk about conduct and what you expect from the fighter in given situations and what you will say to the fighter in those situations. And so there's a communication that goes, you know, back and forth. More of the referee is giving the communication. The fighter's just absorbing it. Most of the time, the fighter's not talking back, but those words that you say and the way that you say them lets them know exactly, hey, this is what I'm thinking right now, so you know you need to take care of this, or this match might be coming to an end or something like that. There's always there has to be communication for it to run and function well.
I got to ask you about the LAPD. When you say that, like, and you know that's the world that you came from, and I'm familiar with the training programs that you are talking about because you know, I write a column for the Oregonian newspaper. I was working in California years ago, and Hoyce Gracie came to work with the FBI in the area I was writing, and he was teaching them how to interact, or if you're in a combat situation and somebody has a gun, here's how you disarm them without, you know, endangering a bunch of people. And I thought that was fascinating. So you were part of that program.
I was part of that program. That was a long time ago. But yeah, you know, I worked for a long time in LAPD, and I worked different places, different units, gang units, things like that. But then I spent a lot of time up at the academy teaching people because you have to have well-taught people for things to well, you know, to run well, because knowledge is key in anything. And it doesn't matter if you're a police officer, a doctor, a lawyer. If you don't know what to do, you're probably going to make a mistake. And so the more knowledge that you can impart on someone, the more tools they have to work with them, usually the better they're going to be at coming to a good conclusion in something. Not always, but that's what you're hoping for.
We're talking to Big John McCarthy, analyst on Showtime, former UFC ref. He will be on the call as Bellator MMA 256 on Showtime goes off on Friday, 6 p.m. on Showtime on the West Coast. What are you looking forward to on the card as you look at the fights that are coming up on Friday?
Oh, my God, there's so many good fights on this card. There's just a variety, and that's the variety helps you in being able to figure out exactly what is going to be the fight that you want to see the most. And it's always, you know, you always look forward to one, and then there'll be another one that'll all of a sudden pop up, and you go, oh, that one's even better. But there's so many. You got a great rematch with Lyoto Machida and Ryan Bader in the main event. But the co-main event is Luke Carmouche is going to be fighting against Vanessa Porto. And both of them are outstanding. They have both fought the very best fighters in the world. They've been in there. You know, Liz Carmouche was the very first female fighter that stepped foot into the UFC's octagon at one time. She was Ronda Rousey's first opponent. They were the main event in UFC 157. And she's been there and done it for a long time. She's just as good today. She's even better today. She's a better fighter. Super strong, very mentally tough. That's going to be a great fight. And then there's a fight between Jeremy Kennedy and Adam Borsch. You're looking at two guys. Jeremy Kennedy is 16-2. Adam Borsch is 16-1. That's going to be a phenomenal matchup. And the one that starts it all off is a guy named Dan Moret. He's fighting. It's a tough name to say for a lot of people, but it's Goichi Yamauchi. He's actually out of Brazil. He's got, you know, an Asian parents moved to Brazil, but he is such a submission master. He's phenomenal. And he's really fun to watch. He's kind of a mix like Lyoto because he's got the karate stance and the stand up. And just from his background, this guy holds the record for Bellator for submission wins. And you think no one should want to take him to the ground. And he kind of suckers guys into doing it, and he ends up submitting himself. But Damrev's never been submitted. He's a tough guy. He fought in the UFC. And he is he's a gamer and a good wrestler. So this should be a great way to start the evening off.
John McCarthy, Big John McCarthy, is our guest, Showtime analyst. We always will think about the fighter stepping into the octagon or the cage, and we'll say, it must be an adrenaline rush. When you're an official or a referee in that situation, do you have the same adrenaline rush, or are you more subdued?
You know, it's a great question, and really it's a matter of you don't want that adrenaline rush. It's not a good thing to have, and it's not a good thing to have as a fighter. It's a matter of the more confident you are in knowing exactly what you need to do and how to do it, and you've been there and done it, you're gonna be able to get away from having those adrenaline rushes. And I didn't have many of them in the latter part of my career. I didn't have any of them except for one, and that was based just upon the size of the event and the people. And I kind of got this, that electric buzz going up your spine. I went, wow, how about that? That means something's important here. That's pretty cool. But that was as the fighters were walking out. But if you end up getting amped for the fight, if you end up getting excited, your heart rate goes up. And when your heart rate goes up, there's things that happen to the human body, and you don't make as good of decisions. You want to be calm and relaxed. That's going to help you make those decisions. So it's something you try to stay away from.
Yeah, I can imagine you kind of want to be, you want to mentally be sharp and calm as this chaos is unfolding around you. Do you miss competing? Do you miss being, in the ring yourself? Or is that something that, with your own black belt and your own history with the sport, you got enough of it. You're close enough to it now that it's good.
Yeah, it's a tough thing, and I see it in fighters all the time. My last competition was really, I was 32 years old. I stopped competing, and that was about the time that, I started reffing with the UFC and things like that, and it was like I let the refereeing become my new competition, and I wasn't in competition with anybody else, but I was in competition with myself, and that how do you do this? How do you do this right? What should be done? That was important. But it's tough for anybody that's been competitive throughout their life and been involved in a lot of, sports, be it, I don't care what it is, if it's jiu-jitsu, if it's boxing, if it's mixed martial arts, if it's swimming, if it's figure skating. When you get competition, it's almost like a drug. And you need to keep on going back and getting that fixed because it makes you happy as a person. It makes you feel like you have something to target, something to shoot towards. That's why I always say, why the world champion? That's so hard to be the world champion. It's easier to get there than it is to hold on to it, because once you're there, there's no target. You're the target. And I was able to separate myself from that competitive side after a while, and it really, like I said, I just switched it over into the officiating of. Now I'm not competing against any other official. That's stupid. But I am competing against myself in what I think is the perfect match. Did I do that perfectly right? There's some that are very easy, and so anyone could do it right. There's some that they're incredibly difficult, and to get it right, it says a lot about who you are and what you can do.
This is Bellator MMA 256 on Showtime. If we unwind it and go all the way back to the original UFC event, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was like, in theory, it was you had all these different combat disciplines that were all brought together, and let's see, is the guy doing jiu-jitsu or the guy doing karate or the boxer or the wrestler, who's going to win this? How has this sport evolved in general, Big John? Like, you were there in the infancy of, UFC 1. How is it developed, and how much better are the fighters?
Well, it's developed, it's what I call the evolution, and it has evolved incredibly. Those first, shows, it was more of a spectacle than it was a sport, and it was more of, which style of fighting is better, because each guy basically did one thing. And to be a good fighter now, you cannot survive if you do one thing. You're going to get exposed very quickly. in the elements where you're deficient. So you look at the fighters of today and you look at what they do and their background and how good they are at everything. You know, it's like, you know, I brought up Adam Borsch as a, you know, the guy who's fighting tonight, 15-1. He had never lost until one loss in Bellator in his entire competitive combat sports career. Boxing, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, and MMA itself, he had not lost once. You know, and you're looking, that's what people are doing now. It's, they're so good everywhere. They don't, they may have a strength, but they're also good in the other areas. And, you know, you look at, I talked about, you know, Liz Carmouche and Vanessa Porto. Vanessa Porto, she's the kind of fighter that I go, she's not great anywhere. And when I say that, I'm not saying that as a bad thing, it's, but she's good everywhere. She's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so her submission game is really strong. But I know of submission fighters that I would say they're a better submission fighter, but her Jiu-Jitsu is good. She's been in Muay Thai competitions. Her stand-up is really good. Now, do I think she's the best Muay Thai fighter? No, but she's really good at it. And her wrestling is now really strong. And that's the type of person that you're getting now in mixed martial arts. You're getting someone that's good everywhere. They may have a strong suit, and it's not only they're good everywhere, then it becomes, all right, who has trained better, who is more prepared, who is mentally stronger, and in the end, sometimes it's, you know, who's the better athlete.
Big John McCarthy, he'll be on the Showtime broadcast on Friday. I encourage you to tune in. Big John, thanks for sharing some time with us. We appreciate you.
John, thank you for having me. You take care.
Big John McCarthy, former LAPD officer, now an analyst, formerly a referee in the UFC. That's an interesting ride. And I know what he's talking about, because there was like this era right around, I'm going to say right around 2000, maybe 20 years ago, law enforcement was bringing in Brazilian jiu-jitsu experts to help them work on, hey, if you encounter somebody who's got a gun and you want to take the gun away from them, how do you do that without, you know, getting in a shootout with somebody? Or if you're in close quarters and you're scrambling and somebody's trying to get your weapon out of your holster, how do you tie them up? And I was summoned by my editor at the time in California to go do a story, because they said, hey, Royce Gracie, who is, you know, the Gracie family in UFC and in MMA in general, legendary. Royce Gracie is conducting a little seminar for the FBI. Why don't you go check it out and write about it? It's kind of sports, but it's not. So I show up, and I'm immediately struck, because I did all the research I had to do before. I watched, like, UFC 1, UFC 2, and I watched Gracie win UFC 1 without throwing a punch. Like, he literally won the event. He never threw a punch. You encounter this guy who's like, you know, slender. It's not, doesn't look like a dangerous human being, like somebody you would encounter in any setting and anywhere. Look like, you know, he's just a regular person. And I'm like, this is the guy who's so dangerous. And I watched him for a while. They were using like fake weapons, and he was showing the FBI officers, hey, you're in, let's say you're in a hallway. The guy grabs your gun. Here's what you do. And it was literally like watching one of those action movies where the character, like Jason Bourne, just goes, you know, and all of a sudden he's got the gun in his hands, you know. And I'm watching Gracie do all this stuff, and then he notices me kind of observing, and he finally comes over, and I said, man, this is really interesting. Like, you know, I watched you win UFC 1 without throwing a punch. Like, you don't look like, no offense, you don't look that strong. And at that moment, he says, come out on the mat with me. And I come out onto the mat with him. And he says, your objective here is to not submit. I didn't have to win the match with Royce Gracie. I just had to not submit. And we literally, for a second, were like tied up like two wrestlers. And then I got to tell you, the guy's like a serpent. He's kind of on you, and you can't quite shake him off. You ever have something like on the back of your neck or your shoulder blade, and you can't quite get it off you? That's where Royce Gracie was on me. He wasn't overpowering, but he was working. And he was well aware, as I found out later, about the arteries in your neck, the blood flow, you know, how all that stuff. And he's literally using pressure points on your neck. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh yeah, he's choking me out. Like literally without choking me out. He was just reducing the blood supply to my brain. And I start to see stars, and then he lets me go and he says, you see what I mean? And I'm like, yeah, like show me what you just did. And he literally was just like using like two or three fingers on his hand to cut off the artery that was feeding blood and oxygen to my brain. And I was like, that is pretty nifty, if you know that. Pretty dangerous. But a lot of respect for the Gracie family, what they do in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And, you know, I've tried to find love in my heart for MMA, UFC. Like, I'm not anti. We've had guests over the years on the show. We had Dana White on the show talk about UFC. We've had, Chael Sonnen on the show to talk about him. We've had others on the show. I can't even remember. Ronda Rousey came on the show once upon a time. We've had some guests, but I'm more interested in them as people as I am interested in, like, Big John McCarthy being former LAPD officer who then pivots into, I want to be a UFC official. And now on the Showtime call for Bellator 256 on Friday night at 6 o'clock Pacific time. I want you to leave it here. We got much more ahead. We'll transition from Big John McCarthy to Big John Wilner. He's coming up bottom of the hour. Leave it here. I was working out in the backyard yesterday, and I heard a noise. And I have a sound effect I guess I can play. And I finally determined that that noise was a drone that had appeared maybe 100 feet overhead. And it was buzzing around, and I kind of... Look, you ever been at a park? And airplane guy shows up at the park, and you know maybe your kids are kicking around a soccer ball, but all of a sudden airplane guy starts buzzing his plane all around the park. He's a grown up. This is usually a guy who's somewhere between the ages of 30 and 50, and he's got an airplane. It's his hobby. Maybe he's blowing off steam. Probably has a right to be in the park, but he starts flying the plane around the park. And I watch airplane guy kind of buzzing his plane around the park, and I think to myself, you know, there are worse activities that he could have. It's annoying, yes, because it's, he's crop dusting the park without, you know. But I kind of feel like airplane guy may have become drone guy in today's world. Because drone guy, and by the way, most of those drones, or a lot of those drones, have cameras on them too, so I'm sure drone guy could see what he was hovering over. Maybe he said, oh, look, there's Canzano in his backyard doing whatever. How do you guys feel about that? How do you guys feel about drones in neighborhoods and privacy and annoyances?
It's a little annoying. You know, my little guy has a drone, but we won't do it in the residential neighborhood. We make sure to get out to a field, a park, something like that. Because I've had that happen, you know, something lurking, you know, kind of close to your window. I used to live in this townhouse and I'd see drones coming by. I don't need that, man.
Yeah, I don't think it's appropriate to be flying those things like over someone's home or in their backyard. Because you're right, John, they do have cameras on them, and you can see that. And certain drones with the control that you have, the controller that you're holding, you know, you can just look down on the screen and see what you're hovering over. So I feel like you really got to pick your spots with the drones. And there are certain areas that are, quote, no-fly zones with the drones.
Yeah, there's also Oregon law has regulations. Some of the laws in the state of Oregon include that you can't weaponize a drone. Obviously, that makes sense. You cannot interfere with manned aircraft. That makes sense. You also, as a property owner, can give notice to the drone operator if you don't want the drone flown over your property. And the property owner can take civil action against the operator after the offenses, after the notice has been given, if you continue to fly it over the property. Now, here's my thing. Peter, you immediately got a pass because you said, my kid has a drone. if your kid has a drone and you're going to the park and you're flying it like back in the day we used to fly the remote control helicopter or the balsa wood plane that we all grew up on
exactly.
that was not worth a damn, you get a pass here. But for the grown-up who's flying the drone, I don't really get what that's about. And you're right, like, I would just not feel right flying that over somebody's house for a number of reasons. One, I'm probably not that good flying the drone. I'm going to lose that thing in a heartbeat. Anna bought me one Christmas, a remote control helicopter several years ago. And I was like, oh, that's cool. We went to the park. I lost it in like 4 minutes. It was gone. I don't know where it went. I still, to this day, I have a useless remote control and no helicopter. And I got over that quick. But I was like, you know, am I going to be airplane guy? Nah, I'm just not. I don't understand the novelty of it. Unless you're like a defense contractor, what are you doing flying a drone around? I don't get it. If that's your job and you're a photographer and you're out practicing, maybe that's the case. He's a photographer and he needs, you know, I need to get some reps. Okay, then I buy that. But, you know, hopefully he's not like filming me in the backyard, you know, digging up weeds. You know, it's like, come on. It's got to be some kind of decency when it comes to these drones. But everyone seemingly has one. And by the way, have you ever been on the website Nextdoor?
No.
Yeah.
What is this?
Okay.
Fill me in.
I had no idea. I hadn't been on Nextdoor until today. I saw a tweet by Jeff Schwartz of CBS, who a former Oregon Duck offensive lineman, who said he went on Nextdoor because there were like some disturbances in his neighborhood and he wanted to get to the bottom of what was going on, like lurking people lurking around. I get that. But he was like, oh my gosh, have you ever been on Nextdoor? The things that people complain about. So I go on to Nextdoor just now and I go into my neighborhood and the drone thing is at the top of it. Anybody know who's flying that drone? And I'm like, hey, maybe I belong on Nextdoor. But the other things they're complaining about are people's cats, the way people have their lawns mowed. It's like everything that I'm anti or against. Like, I got to get off. I'm killing the account right now.
Probably another one is picking up your dog's doo-doo.
Just pick up after yourself. Yeah, pick up. I caught a lady one time in front of my house. I was driving by, and I wasn't going to stop at the house. I was driving by the front of my own house, and I saw a dog doing its business, right? And it happens. She's like on that little strip of grass that's in front of the house. So I watch as I'm coming up the street, and she picks it up in a plastic bag and ties the bag off and then leaves it in front of my house. And I roll the window down and say, are you gonna take that with you? Like, where, you know? And she says, oh, I'm going to come back and get it.
Oh, yeah.
She never came back. It was still sitting there hours later.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.